Amen. Okay, let me just write down where we ended, verse 22. Okay. Ended in chapter 8, 22. We're actually getting closer to the verse that actually has direct relevance to covenant as we get closer to chapter 9 and 11. Okay. I'm hoping that was worthwhile to you. I hope that makes some clarity, that made some differences for you so you could really understand the things that are going on. Okay, I hope that that makes some sense. This is what we call the afterburn. This is where we go ahead and take comments or questions about the teaching from today. Okay, Nate's going to go around with the microphone. Also, we've got we got both Wyatts over there helping to man the admin desk. So Rob and his wife Tamara happen to be sitting with him. But Rob's going to man the admin desk there, and he'll take the questions from the internet. Okay, we begin with Michelle. Okay, Michelle, go ahead.
I have a two-point question. I've been waiting to ask you this because I'm going to do the mikveh tomorrow with my son who will be ready.
Okay, children can't mikveh till 20.
All right, he won't be that disappointed.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, hold on. Let me clarify that, though. It's a good question that came up. I'm not against children going in the water just for the fact that they're children. I want them, when they make those declarations, to understand fully what they're doing. I don't think that even 20-year-olds most of the time know what they're doing. Some of you at 40 don't know what you're doing, okay? So I certainly have had my moments when I was 40, I didn't know what I was doing, okay? So what I'm saying is, I generally speaking wait for the age of majority according to the book of Numbers, which is age 20, which is the age we can go to war. So if you're responsible enough to go to war, I would say, okay, you're responsible enough to make these declarations, and I would counsel them about that. So if you have children that want to go in, they're not going to be doing this, okay? Now, we did once write up a little thing for the children because it would drive me crazy, where they were going in and making a commitment to listen to their parents better or something like that. I'll think about writing up another one of those at some point, but it wasn't this, okay? So if you have children, some of you have teenagers that are getting close, some of the teenagers, just wait till you're 20, okay? We're gonna wait for 20, and I think that's when you will be more fully prepared to make those commitments. Okay, now go to your next question.
All right, and to more serious, because it sounds like a very serious thing, because, I mean, isn't there no more sacrifice if you break the Torah after you pledge to keep the covenant? And that's my first question. So my second one will be like the things that I think I would have a problem with, like cursing. I have a huge problem with, most people don't know that because I speak really well, thanks to my adopted dad from Jersey, master's degree in English from the University of Chicago. But I have a father who was from New York, New Jersey, and they curse all the time. And so every once in a while, I have a problem with that. And I think it has to do with my unfortunate upbringing with that attribute from such an educated person.
Okay.
So that's something that concerns me, and I've been reading the Psalms according to the rabbi, the other rabbi, and during the week, you know, so that concerns me.
Okay.
That's a concern for me. That is a weakness. I don't smoke, I don't drink, and I haven't for over a decade. My second concern is that I have for myself. When you say, my loyalties to this world, does that mean that I'm no longer politically involved? I don't do my art. I don't.
No, I mean, it has to do with authority. It has to do with authority ultimately.
Well, ultimately, that means my ex-husband David. And you would say that, does he have authority over my life anymore?
No.
Even though he hangs on to that get and that ketubah, and he won't take it off
you
the
get,
wall.
Did you get married just with a ketubah and a get, or did you get married under the normal state of whatever state you lived in?
I got married with a Jewish wedding with a get and a ketubah and an Orthodox and
know,
a conservative rabbi.
But you got a license from the state?
I did have a license. And I'm married a divorce lawyer.
Okay.
So he divorced me according to the laws of Tennessee.
If he divorced you according to the laws of Tennessee, then you don't need to worry about the other two things. Okay?
So I'm not under his authority anymore?
No.
Because he sure makes me feel like it.
Well, that's his problem.
Okay.
And he can take me to court on that. Okay. Okay, let me answer your questions. Okay, so first of all, you're going to not be perfect when you come out of the water. You are going to sin. And don't worry about that whole, there is no sacrifice for it. That's a whole different thing. We could talk about it another time. What you need to do is that recognize when you do fall short, make teshuvah. Repent, turn around, get back on the path. Okay, so you're not going to be perfect, and you're not expected to be perfect when you go in the water. You're expected to want to be perfect, to want to strive. Remember, the key words in there is, I choose to take upon myself the names and to commit to walk out, to strive. The idea is to walk it out. I'm committing to walk it out. I'm going to fall short. But that's my commitment, is to make the effort. Okay, we're going to strive to walk out in such a way. Now, the thing with the cursing, okay, this is just my own personal thing. Lots of people are not going to like it, and they're not going to agree with me. When we're talking about cursing, she's talking about foul language. Okay, foul language is 100% arbitrary. It's not scriptural. It's just words. We as a society have decided what is foul language. In some societies, it's not foul language, certain things we think, and they think other things are. It's a societal, cultural thing. However, if you want to fix that and clean that up, then that's something you want to fix, that's something you should do, and that's fine. Okay? There are people that still will be offended when you use what this particular culture thinks is inappropriate language. However, it's just words. It's not cursing like, you know, some voodoo thing, like we're laying a curse on somebody. You're just using language that people have called curse language, whatever. But it's language that they call foul or inappropriate language. Okay? There's not a single verse in here that talks about that. All right? It's not a sin. What? It's coarse. It's harsh. It's from, so now, but it's not always used to be coarse or harsh. Okay? In other words, it's not always directed at anybody. When it's directed at somebody, then it's inappropriate because now you're being mean. And that's different. But if you happen to be, hitting something in and hit your thumb, and a word comes out of your mouth that's not directed at anybody, that's not so much coarse language hurting anybody. Okay? So I'm not advocating you to do this. I just want to make sure we're clear on things that could be attributed that's not scriptural to being scriptural in some way. Okay? There is no verse, for example, that says cleanliness is next to godliness. That's not in the Proverbs anywhere. Okay? So I'm just saying there are things that we've adopted in our mindset, and it's arbitrary. Okay? So therefore, understand the cultural thing. Okay? And it's cultural, and it's language, and it's national. I mean, I'll use a simple example. Okay? A derogatory word for a gay person was a fag here in this country. In England, it meant a cigarette. So you can see how that could be very different culturally. Okay? Well, in one country, it's a derogatory term. In another country, it meant a cigarette. Okay? So it's arbitrary. It's not like it's scriptural and it's been that way since the beginning of time. As a matter of fact, you go back centuries, they didn't use the same words we use as far as curse words, so to speak, you know, or foul language or inappropriate, whatever. Now, you should strive to love your neighbor as yourself, which means you should try to use what's appropriate in the company you're in because you don't want to offend. You don't want to be coarse. You don't want to bring judgment as far as them judging you, which really they shouldn't judge you, but you know. Well, why cause your brother to stumble? So did I come around and kind of fix that at the end? So I'm not advocating it at all. I just want us to be clear. So it's good that you brought that up because I think people really struggle with understanding what is Torah and what is not. From a coarse harshness, if I use that language and direct it at you, that's not appropriate. That's mean. That's being mean-spirited. I'm trying to hurt your feeling. I'm trying to make you mad. I'm trying to pick on you and hurt you in some way. All right? And so that's not appropriate. Okay? Anyway. All right. Next question. Okay, Deirdre?
First of all, if I'm allowed to say this, in terms of the, you know, this coarse language and swearing, I have picked up a habit, and it's, you know, to break, you know, the string of coarse language, and I just substitute, you know, a biblical name.
Look, okay, let me say, this is actually a really good point. I wanna shame a bunch of you and say, shame on you. When you say, like whatever little word you use instead of saying the word you really want to use, it's the same. Okay, in you, when you go, oh, sugar, I know you didn't really want to say sugar. But you've decided it's okay to say sugar when you meant the other word, which doesn't taste like sugar. Okay? I'm just saying, You've developed a habit to say, I'm okay, because I found another word to say what I really want, and everybody knows what I'm really trying to say, but I use the other word instead. So let's not do that either. To me, that's being dishonest, okay? You want to say the word, use the word. If you don't, then don't. Then just don't do it. Overcome the need to have to use that kind of, you know, to make that kind of expression, because you're not fooling anybody. It's just not. There's a comedian out there. Oh, I forget the guy's name. But he has the 100 curse words that Christians use. Not Carlin. No, that's different. No. What? Right, Tim Hawkins. You can go look that up. I'm not advocating all his Christian, you know, comedy, but he has got a thing, the 100 curse words that Christians use. And it's every euphemism that they possibly could have used, you know, instead of saying the curse word.
I rebuke you.
Okay, you know, like shut the front door or whatever, I don't know, okay? Okay, so, but I'm just saying, it's funny, and but you'll appreciate the hypocrisy in that whole thing, okay? Look, if you want to say it, say it. Don't be a hypocrite. If you don't want to say it, then don't say it in any form, because you're being a hypocrite otherwise. Does that make any sense to anybody?
Yes.
Okay? Because people say, well, I don't really mean to say the other word. Yes, you do. You want the feeling that it evokes. You want the meaning behind it. And those words don't mean what they actually literally mean anymore. They mean I'm extremely over-the-top angry, whatever they mean. Okay? There's a difference between when you, like, bang yourself lightly and you go, oh, man, and when you, like, really hurt yourself and the other words come out of your mouth. It's communicating the extremeness of the situation. So you're trying to do that using other words. The euphemisms, to me, I think is hypocrisy. That's just my opinion, because I know what you're really trying to say, and so do you. And don't try to convince me otherwise, okay? Because I know the truth there. Deirdre, go ahead.
Okay, now that I've just thrown myself on my sword for everybody.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Papa. In terms of, you know, self-sovereignty, I find very often that comes along, you know, feelings go along with that. And I have been, you know, told all my life, you know, not just by you, but by, you know, my mother and the family, you know, growing up with, you know, feelings lie. You know, you do not want to be controlled by feelings. Your feelings lie. So I think that once you know you like something, you know, like you've always talked about, that feeling is attached to it. Being, you know, before I moved up to Cleveland, I was alone, you know, most of the time. And not just, you know, even before I had Alice, you know, I was alone. I was the homemaker. I was trying to just take care of my home. I didn't, you know, need to go out and work. My husband, you know, was in the military. He was taking good care of us. But I was just stuck in the house, and I had, you know, no, you know, way of going out and just being a part of society. So when my husband came home, and I was like a little puppy dog following around the house, like, how was your day? You know, just trying to, you know, soak up every little drop of, you know, being around somebody else. And now that I am, you know, in a place where I am surrounded by so much family, you know, I have really had to get over the fact that, you know, he's not the only one. He's not the only person. And I have allowed myself, without even knowing it, to, you know, care about what he thinks. And I'm doing this walk, and I want you to care about it, but he can't because he's not where I am.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's what I was struggling with, you know, right. This, because I'm going in the water and I want him to be there. And he was going to be, but now he can't. And my heart broke over it because it's such a life-altering decision. And I want him to be there. But I, you know, I had to come to the realization that it's better if he's not, because as much as he loves me, as much as he's trying to understand me, he doesn't agree. He's not there yet. And I can't
allow. And it won't mean as much to him as it does to you.
Exactly.
Because of that. Yeah.
Exactly. And I need to surround myself with people who will 100% support me, or who's trying to understand. And I have to, you know, this is going to be, as excited as I am to go into the water, it's going to be somewhat painful because in a way it's a severing. And I have to, you know, I have to figure out who I care about more.
Right.
And, you know, so feelings, that the feelings of, you know, just needing him to be there, he doesn't, it's a lie. And
right.
I'm just, you know, just
he would be there just to observe what you're doing. He wouldn't be participating the way you would be.
Right. He wouldn't be as excited as everybody else here would be for me.
Well, we still, you know, we know him well and we appreciate him and we want him to be here and we're going to continue to pray for his growth. And look, he's somebody that does talk to me from time to time. And
this is in no way me bad-mouthing him.
No. And you still need to maintain loving him second. Okay, first Elohim and Messiah, but then he's above all the rest of us. You still need to love him that way. And, you know, and I know you do. And so I just want to make sure that that's clear to everybody. When you talk about severing and things, you're not talking about severing from your husband. But you got to understand that you have to be able to keep those two lives a little bit separate until they can become one again.
That's exactly what I'm trying
Unfortunately,
to say.
Unfortunately, there's two things, your life in Messiah and your life at home.
Yes.
And they're not necessarily congruent at the moment.
Right.
And we're going to pray that they get there at some point.
Thank you.
Okay. Amen. Okay,
hey,
Mr.
Everybody.
Frank.
Yeah. Okay, so I just got back from Korea, and when you said, you know, self-sovereignty and keeping the Shabbat, it's really difficult because for me and my job, when we got flight hours, because the Korean government would tell us, hey, you can fly on these days between these times, it was almost always Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So for the past 8-9 months, I haven't been able to just walk up to my platoon sergeant or to my chief and say, hey, I'm not working today because I don't have that authority to say that. So I, you know, just listening, hearing a lot of people saying, you know, like, how am I self-sovereign? How do you get off that pedestal? And one of the things that I would do was when I had time off, I'd be like, okay, well, I didn't get, you know, the seventh day on Saturday, but I'm going to actively, like when I do have time off, you know, read my word. And it was really rough because I would have to watch the teaching after the live stream because I think it's like 15 hours ahead of the States. So it was super hard to stay in touch. And now that I'm back, you know, and I'm starting to get closer to getting out of the military and actually kind of take back some of that sovereignty because I gave it up when I signed on. And
right.
I know
right.
sometimes... Abba has to work on weekends, not anymore, but emergency service personnel do as well. So my question, I guess, would be, and I got blessed because a lot of my leadership understand that, you know, it's a not only is it a religious preference, but it's also a life choice.
Right.
Some don't. So, but when I get asked a lot all the time about it, and aside from self-education and like giving them the... trying to talk about it or defend it. I guess just not so much a question, just more of a praise. The fact that like, even though I haven't been able to do it, to keep Shabbat on, you know, the seventh day as much as I wanted to, just that because I was tactful in my way of handling it when my chief brought me into the office and was like, hey, why are you asking for Saturday off? When, you know, for this 3-day weekend or whatever, and I say, well, because it's my holy day, and we don't always have to, you know, I don't always get it off, and I'm, you know, I told him why and pointed him to the teaching. It was like, you know, if you're really more curious about it, you can go watch Rabbi Steve talk about it. Just be warned, it's probably like a 36th thing. Like
enough military guys do that, they're gonna like be talking about me now in the military.
Yeah,
that Rabbi Steve is messing up our. Okay.
No. Luckily, they're really. Really, I have a good leadership team. They have their moments, but for the most part, when it comes to some of the things you're not supposed to touch in the military, they're really good on that one. So
good.
I'm thankful.
Good. All right. Thank you, Frank.
Yeah. So that's all I had to say is if you do have someone who's in charge of you, it's not that hard to just say okay. You just, you know, have to handle it tactfully, respectfully, and understand that one day you will be in that position. Like I'm about to step up and go to BLC and become a E5, become a sergeant and a team leader. And now I'm going to have to be the one that's saying, hey, you know, like, you can't do that or whatnot. So just be encouraged. It's not nearly as hard as it is. You think it is.
Okay, thank you. All right, let me just repackage a couple of things just so that it's clear for everyone of what he's not saying to be confused. We're not saying that if you can't do Saturday, you could do whatever other day you want. Neither was Frank. I know he wasn't trying to say that. He just said in his frustration, he did make some efforts at least to make time when he did have time. But also understand, there's a difference between signing up for the military and working at the local, wherever business you work at. Okay, he literally signed over his sovereignty. That's a different thing than you just saying, I'm agreeing to work for you. He can't just change jobs, okay? He made a contract. You can change jobs anytime you want, okay? Within, you know, I mean, you have the freedom to leave a job and go get another one. So just realize that there are those differences, okay? There's also, in a discussion on the Sabbath teaching where I talked about it, if you're in what's called life and death emergency services, there's a discussion that I have on those things. That means if you are working in, like, you're an EMT, or you work in the emergency room at the hospital, or these are things that are life and death if you're a police officer, you know. These are things that there always is a need to have going 24/7, 365. Even in Israel, they always had these things. But in that discussion, what I've always talked about was, A, you should only be doing it because you really feel led and called to that particular vocation. And then you should, if you're going to end up working on a Saturday because you are, like Nate, a nurse who might be called in, he doesn't anymore, but when that would happen, you know, I always encourage people, then you shouldn't financially benefit from that. You should be doing it because you're doing it because you want to keep people safe. And so I've encouraged and people generally have done this, to take that one day's pay and just put it in the offering box and not benefit from it, okay? And that seems to have worked really well for them. They really feel better about the whole idea of doing it that way. But I'll tell you what, both my kids ended up in an emergency room on a Friday night, you know, at least once in their life, and I was glad somebody was working because we needed that, okay? And we had, one time we had to have an ambulance show up. You know, my daughter was real little and fell and hit her head, cut her skull open right above her eyebrow. And hey, if nobody was working and everybody was off on Shabbat, we'd had no way to handle this thing, okay? And so if you don't understand these things or you want clarification, call me and let me help walk you through it, okay? But there is a difference between working at most jobs and working in what's called emergency services and, you know, life and death services, okay? And so thank you, Frank, for bringing that up. And the best part I liked about it, what he says, I'm trying to get work my way out. See, so when he gets out, he will be able to keep things without having his sovereignty in under someone else, because he actually contracted somebody else into that sovereignty position. That's what you have to do to be in the military. All right, Nate.
I just wanted to clarify, I have not worked a Shabbat in a very long time. I don't even remember when I've worked an actual Shabbat. I have left here from being here on a Saturday to go home and get a little nap or go to bed early so that I could be up
for a night shift
on Sunday morning. Or when I was working nights, I would leave here early on Saturday night to cover for that.
Well, but I'm just saying, but in either case, you work in the ER.
Right.
Okay, and that would be one of those services that, you know.
And my employers understand that if you have a real emergency, and there's nobody to cover or we get a rush or whatever, I will be more than happy to come in and volunteer my time. However, I do have to clock in because I have to be in the system. Fortunately, I haven't had to do that. But they understand also... Right. If you call me in on a Saturday, or if you tell me, if you try to mandate me to come in on a Shabbat, bye, I'm out. They already know that. So, good. But they've honored that because I'm a good employee. I think I'm a good employee, or at least they've told me that. So,
okay. So that's the last thing I want to wrap up with. Is the important thing I think that Frank said, and that Nate kind of exemplified, is that these things are fixable once you have your sovereignty back. See, right now he doesn't. Okay, Nate has established his sovereignty. So until you get your sovereignty back, you can't submit it under him. So if you've already contracted it out or signed it over to somebody else, you need to be striving to get out of that. So where you have your sovereignty back. Okay? All right, who's next?
Rabbi, thank you so much for once again being the only one who seems to be able to make any sense out of what Shaul says. Even Kifa couldn't figure that out. What jumped out at me, and it hit me like a ton of bricks, is the line in Romans 7:11 where he talks about having been deceived. And then in 13, he talks about that sin was working death in me through what is good. And just two verses earlier, he had talked about that the Torah was good and the Torah is righteousness. It, correct me if I'm mistaken, but it seems like to me what sin did was co-opted or hijacked his desire for righteousness, his desire to serve Elohim. And it so thoroughly hijacked that he actually was doing what he thought was right in going after the followers of Yeshua and killing them. He thought he was acting righteously.
Correct.
And it wasn't until on the road to Damascus that his eyes got open and blinded at the same time that he came to realize that what this struggle was, that now he understood that he had a struggle now between actually pursuing righteousness and pursuing the law of sin and death. And that's why he identifies the two different laws there, which the Christians seem to think is only one, the Torah. But I think it's also important to point out that many people, especially Christians, are also deceived, so thoroughly deceived, yeah. And so many of them are so devout in their faith, and they just don't see that they're deceived.
Correct. All right, so that's excellent, because, you know, look, he says, it was working death in me through what was good. In other words, even though you know the law, you know the Torah, you can use it in a wrong way. And that's what he was doing, okay, because he was deceived. All right. We got a lot of people out there that have the sort of the little nickname Torah terrorists. You know, they're taking what is good and they're using it in a wrong way. And so that's wrong. Let's always remember also that all of the Christian friends that you have are generally in the eyes haven't been opened, ears haven't been opened, deceived category, and they haven't recognized yet that they've been deceived. You know what it felt like the moment you woke up and realized you'd been lied to. Okay? They will have that moment, and we just pray that it comes soon, okay? All right, next question. Owen?
Thank you, Rabbi. Romans chapter 7, when it talks, verse 2, when it talks about the married woman, is that like a literal thing, married woman, or is it just like making an example?
No, I mean, literally, there is a Torah that says that the woman is bound by Torah to the living husband, and if the husband dies, she's released to go marry somebody else. Okay, I mean, that is part of the Torah about marriage. But he's not using it for the literal part. He is absolutely doing zero discussion about marriage here. He's trying to make the point that he starts going into, but the fact that, like in a marriage, you're being set free because of the death of Messiah from the law of sin and death. Like you are married to another so that you're now going to be married to Messiah. He's trying to make an analogy, okay? And so he's not stopping in the middle of this whole discussion to have just two verses to talk about marriage, okay? All right, he's trying to use it as a metaphor for the point he was making. All right, live stream.
All right, this is from Brandon Tilton. Also, Olivia and Janet Hoffman asked, in chapter 7, verse 15, it says, could the thorn in Paul's side be the fact that he killed believers prior to the walk?
The thorn in his side... Well, and in my translation, it doesn't use those words there. But you know, the idea is that, you know, he, you're in Romans 7, where?
Olivia or Janet was saying that in 7, verse 15, but.
He says, well, I work, I know not, and for what I wish, I do not practice what I hate. There's no thing about the thorn here. So we don't know what the thorn in his side was. It certainly could have been, you know, the guilt over certain things or something like that, or just an addictive thing that he had never broken. It could be a physical fleshly thing that was never healed, but it doesn't say. But that isn't in this section here, so.
Okay, from Earl Lee Lethbridge says, may I do the declarations now at home? Until I get a chance to be with the witnesses. I think he's talking about the mikveh declarations.
All right, if you want to do a mikveh, I did a mikveh with somebody in Africa one time, and we did it on Skype, and then We did the declarations. Then I sent them to go in the water. And then I told them to call me back when they got back from where the water was. And they called me back and we finished the ceremony after they came back. But, you know, so Earl, we could certainly do something like that. You could always get in touch with the Zimmermans, though, and Chris can help you with that as well. Because I know where Earl lives up there in Alberta. So you can get in touch with the Zimmermans. They may be able to help facilitate that. But you still have to make the declarations in front of witnesses and then go in the water, and that should be witnessed as well. Okay, when I sent the ones in Africa to go do it, it was a husband and wife, so they could each watch each other go under the water, make sure they went under, you know, and then come back. But otherwise, we could do something similar. But reach out to Chris Zimmerman and see if he might be able to help you. Okay.
Okay, from Ronnie Smith, Romans 8:16. Please clarify, the Spirit himself bears witnesses. Witness.
I don't understand what needs to be clarified there. It says simply that the Spirit, the truth, Yeshua, you know, the Spirit, excuse me, the law of the Spirit that he's been talking about, bears witness with our spirit. When they bear witness together, then we understand that we are children of the living Elohim. It says, for you did not receive the spirit of bondage. You received the spirit, verse 14, for as many as are led by the spirit of Elohim, these are the sons of Elohim. Then we get down to the verse you're asking about. So the Spirit himself bears witness with our spirit that we are children of Elohim. If you haven't heard the teaching on the Ruach, then you don't understand the idea of intrinsic nature. When our intrinsic nature matches his intrinsic nature, then we are understood to now be children of the living Elohim. When we brought our nature in line with his nature, and we make these commitments. But if you haven't listened, you might have to go back and listen to understanding the Ruach. Okay?
Okay, from Nancy H. Question, there's no scriptural basis for Christianity's doctrine of original sin, but it's that we are born with the innate desire for self-sovereignty, and is it the same as the law of sin and death?
Okay, I'm going to try to see if I can break that apart. Okay, so there are verses that say that by one man sin entered the world. Because until Adam sinned, there wasn't any sin. Until his wife and his, until they sinned, there was no sin. That doesn't mean original sin, that we're all, you know, born as sinners. No, you're born and then you have to do something to sin. However, we're also born with what's called free will. And free will has a lot to do with that sovereignty thing. Okay? So you're born, at some point you get to an age where you realize you have the choice to say the word no. Children love that word when they first hear it, only when they can say it out of their own mouth. If it comes out of someone else's mouth, they don't like it at all. Okay? But they love to use that word to just say no, even if it's something that they like, they'll sometimes say no, just to assert themselves in that authority role. Okay? And so we are born to be sovereign individuals who can then voluntarily submit ourselves under authority. Because that's how you end up without rebellion. Because when a sovereign individual voluntarily submits, they're not going to rebel. When you force them to submit, they will at some point rebel. Okay, next question.
Okay, from Olivia and Janet Hoffman. It says, chapter 8. 5 through 9 made me think of Galatians 5:22. If we set our minds on the matters of the Spirit, we'll produce the fruit of the Spirit, and not expecting the Spirit to do it all for us.
Correct.
Is this correct?
Yeah, that's good. That's a good analogy. Galatians 5, you know, it gives you first the fruit of the flesh, and then it gives you the fruit of the Spirit, and you go through that starting around verse 19 or something like that. And let me just see. I think that's about right. Let's see, 5. Yeah, for the flesh lusts against the Spirit. So it starts around verse 17. It goes all the way down to 23. Okay? Okay, but notice in Galatians 5:24 says, and those who are of Messiah have impaled the flesh with his passions and desires. And so if we live in the Spirit, well, let us also walk in the Spirit. Okay? And again, if you don't know what the word Spirit means, it means his intrinsic nature. If we're going to walk in it, then we ought to walk according to it. Okay? Anybody else?
Nope, that's it.
All right. Okay, let's go ahead and get the children.